The Nonfiction Brand Podcast is predicated on the idea that people who want to build their businesses, their small businesses, need to embrace what Mark Schaefer calls the marketing rebellion. You know, the personal brand is the company brand and all that stuff. And anyone who listens to this podcast knows that I'm a huge Mark Schaefer fan. And I understand that he is a big Matthew Sweezy fan. In fact, if I look at your banner on LinkedIn, there's a nice quote from Mark Schaefer about your forthcoming book. And it says, "The Context Marketing Revolution is the first business book in 10 years that I started to read again as soon as I finished it. Essential reading." Mark Schaefer, author of Marketing Rebellion. Could you get, is it possible that you could have gotten a more full-throated endorsement from who I consider to be one of the greatest marketing minds of our time?
No, it was kind of luck how it happened too. It's funny, but yeah, I love Mark. I've known Mark for, I guess personally, like deeply personally, over the past year, we've become like really close. Before that, we just kind of knew each other from the speaking circuit. And anyone that's ever engaged with Mark just knows that he's just a genuinely amazing human, which I think most people wouldn't associate someone with such a high profile as so down to earth. But really, I don't know many humans, period, with his hearts as big as Mark.
Yeah.
He's just an amazing human.
Yeah.
And he had put out Marketing Rebellion, and I reached out and I said, "Hey man, there's, Uberflip, Randy Frisch had just published Fuck Content Marketing. You know, Marketing Rebellion had just come out. There's three or four different books that were all about like disruption and marketing. And I was going to write an article about it because that's very much a theme that I follow." And Mark was like, had said some things about it. And I said, "Well, listen, man, like just check out this new podcast I just made." And then he listened to it and wrote back. He's like, said, "Wow." And that kind of started us down because we realized how similar our ideas and methodologies are. And so, yes, I'm a massive Mark fan.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell that there's a lot of commonality. You know, if you take the Venn diagram between you, your book, The Context Marketing Revolution, which comes out, I think, March 24th of 2020. Is that correct?
Correct.
If you take a look at the content of that book and put it up right next to Marketing Rebellion, you're going to see a lot of this of similar DNA, perhaps framed up in a little bit different way. And I think I can prove that most easily by simply pointing to the title of the book, The Context Marketing Revolution.
Which Mark had a lot of hand in.
I would love to hear that story, but the key thing there is the word context, because obviously you're playing, you know, content marketing has been a buzzword for a long, long time. And I think it's a totally legitimate area of marketing. Absolutely. But by playing on it, by twisting it from content to context, you're actually saying or coining something new. And I want to talk about that newness thing, but I want to go in context of the introduction to your book. And in there, you start out with a anecdote about getting a notification on your phone in your pocket. You know, and we can talk a little bit in a few minutes about your day job at Salesforce, but it's important you know that, listeners, because this story is about Salesforce. In fact, Forbes magazine had just named the company the most innovative company in the world for the fourth straight year. And your story short is that, funny thing is, I hadn't seen that article. In spite of the fact that you're in marketing strategy at Salesforce, and that you are getting constant pings from Forbes all the time, guess what? You couldn't get that information because there's too much information out there.
Yeah.
My takeaway from this is that, and it's kind of related to your thesis of your book, which is if you're a company or an individual even trying to get your message out there and you're trying to do it directly, good luck with that because there's so much out there. However, my big takeaway was that social sharing is working brilliantly because you found out about it via a friend who had seen it and said, "Hey, this is kind of cool." Is that kind of what you're getting about in the book here?
Yeah. So the book really kind of gets into that. First off, let's start in a very specific point and to steal a term from Simon Sinek, the why. Let's start with the why, right? I didn't just say that context is, you know, the new thing because I wanted to, you know, coin a term. It really comes out of deep research, and it comes out of research and specifically looking at media and media environments. Now, this is an arcane topic that most people aren't really down with, don't know about, unless you are familiar with a man named Marsh McLuhan or Harold Innes or Neil Postman, right? These are the godfathers, grandfathers, and creators of this field. And really why this is so important is because media theory and media environments operate just like any other environment, right? So if we take oxygen, we take air, right? And if the mixture of oxygen to nitrogen and to all the other gases in our atmosphere changes, all things that live within that ecosystem or in that environment must adapt and change, right? And so now we start to say media, and we say, well, media doesn't change humans, but the exact opposite, right? It gives us the notion of what we believe love is. Our idea of sexy and beautiful comes through the media that we know, right? Specifically, Marsh McLuhan says, the notion of what humans think about as romantic love is delivered to them through media, right? We don't come with these ideas in our head. They're delivered to us by the environment. Now, what we must understand is when the bounds of this environment shift, all things within this environment shift. And the two things we must keep in and really keep an eye on as what are shifting are one, of business strategy, and two, consumer behavior, right? So business strategy, from everything from the foundations of how we organize our structures and our organizations to the actual role that marketing plays within them, those are just games that we create, right? Those are games. It's not a truth, right? Marketing is not a truth. It's a game that we play given the bounds of the media environment that we play within. So if we look at this idea of marketing and say, now this gets to the second aspect of the book, the word revolution. Why is the word revolution? It's so overplayed. Why would you even use that? Right? It was a big debate between me and Mark on that word. And the point is that we have not entered a new media era in terms of the scale that I've found out ever in the history of the world, right? And just think about one little change in the media environment when we create a movable type, right? It took in, you know, Gutenberg. Well, often it was Gutenberg. He didn't create the printing press. It was movable type. What that allowed to happen was just more content to be created. And just that one aspect of change took the world out of the dark ages and into the age of enlightenment. What I'm talking about and why this is a revolution is because this is the first time that consumers control the media environment in the history of the world. It's not just more noise. It's from new players. It creates a new environment, which means a new entire set of rules. So it's not an evolution of old ideas. We just can't take old marketing ideas and evolve on them because they were games created for a very different environment, what I would call the limited media era. And now that we live in the infinite, context is the new ground for the infinite media era. And that kind of wraps all those ideas together. So it's deep research, super nerdy, but that's the why that these things matter.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding, and we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
Wow, I totally get what you're talking about, because I remember working at an ad agency, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and seeing an article in Adweek, you know, the industry magazine, about how Procter & Gamble, the packaged goods manufacturer, was taking all of its money out of its budget from traditional broadcast marketing and putting it into digital marketing, you know, using the internet in even its earliest nascent forms to do all that stuff. And my traditionally oriented brain was, oh my God, this is insane. I mean, I can see taking a big chunk, but all of it? And what you're saying is, P&G recognized that the game had changed.
Yep.
And they were responding appropriately. And I'm sorry, but you're also implying that I'm an old traditionalist who wasn't moving with the times. And I hate to say it, but you were absolutely right. And I'm emblematic of a whole bunch of people who are just starting to understand that the game has changed. But what you're saying is that this revolution actually had a specific start date. And that was June 24th of 2009. What do you mean by that? What happened on June 24th of 2009 that was so dang important that it changed the way that we should all be thinking about marketing our businesses and marketing ourselves?
Yeah. So June 24th, 2009 is a specific date that I derived from research and some large mathematics. So what I've done is I looked at noise, right? So if we believe a game that marketing is supposed to play is that we're supposed to be able to break through the noise and motivate a consumer, right? That's kind of the game we're trying to play. Well, the question then becomes is, at what volume is that noise? And so I started tracking it, went all the way back to 1900 and projected all the way forward to 2030 and found all of this noise. And what what everyone assumes and what we all know is that noise is constantly growing and it's much larger than it ever has been. Duh, right? We get that. What we missed is that not all noise is the same. And what we really need to understand is that it's not just more noise, it's a completely different environment. So what happened on that day specifically is that was the first day in the history of the world that consumers and their devices became the largest creators of noise in the history of the world and forever will be moving forward into time. And so number one creator of noise is now individuals. Number two are their devices. Number three are brands and businesses. In fact, 2-1, that's how much noise. This doesn't even take into account social media feeds as noise, right? This is more looking at notifications, emails, messaging apps, right? And so that's what happened on that day. That was the first day that we entered the infinite media era.
Yeah, wow. Can you give us a quick definition of noise? You use that term a lot in a different way than most of us would think of the definition of noise.
Yeah, so noise is going to be any message that reaches an individual, right? And so when we think of the traditional definition of noise, we think of it from a brand perspective. These are brand messages, but really it's any media that reaches an individual because it's something that's going to take up their time and attention. It's something that they have to deal with in their daily lives, right? So what traditionally happened in the limited media era before that date, the only creators of noise were brands because we lived in a limited media era. And that's defined really simply by three things: content creation, content distribution, and then access to that media. So my father was a print shop teacher, so is his father, right? If anyone that's lived around any length of time knows creating media used to cost a lot of money, right? And it's just gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper as digital has come about. That's one thing. The second is then distribution. In the limited media era, you had to go through a pre-existing distribution channel. You had to publish through a magazine, through a television channel, through a radio station to get that message to the masses. And then finally, that media was of an analog sort, right? So it didn't stay around for very long. Right now, in that environment, we then created very specific decision-making processes, which we'll get to in a second, right? The games that we play. And then we look at the infinite media environment. Now, anyone or anything can create media. In fact, there are more people on the face of the planet with access to a cell phone than have access to clean drinking water or electricity. If you drive through Africa, you see solar power everywhere powering cell phones because that's how their entire economy runs, right? Now, what can each one of those devices do? It can create media with no cost, zero friction. It can distribute it to anyone, anywhere in the world, either at a one-to-one or a mass scale. And then it's of a digital sort, and it's instantly accessible and infinitely available, right? So we have a totally different environment, and that really is specific to then how people make decisions, right? How we motivate them, we must understand how they make decisions. And this is where we start to get into like the eraser or the erasure of like old ideas, right? These old marketing myths and beliefs, like sex sells, we need to be top of mind, no such thing as bad press, right message, right time. And now those are all games we created in a specific point in time. We can't carry them through because we no longer live in that time.
Wow, that again, that is really deeply, richly impactful because it's like what you're saying is take everything you know about the rules of the game that you've played and understand you're not playing that game anymore.
Exactly right.
You're playing an entirely new one with new referees, with new boundaries, with new rules that many of which have not been truly discovered yet. And if you're playing this new game by the old game's rules, you've already lost.
You're going to fail.
Am I making too much out of that?
No, it's exactly right. And I mean, let's be clear, like that is why Harvard wanted to publish this book, right? I mean, they publish 24 books a year, not a lot of marketing books from Harvard Business, right? Like that was the thesis. They believe it to be such an important part that that's why they wanted to move it forward. And so when you start looking at these games, right? So let's make this actionable for the listener, right? Let's think about some things that we believe is marketing truths and then just completely debunk, right? Let's start with top of mind, right? There's this idea that most businesses believe that they need to be top of mind. So that then drives a lot of their marketing activities where they say, hey, listen, this is a good thing for me to do because it gets me top of mind. But I would say in response, top of what mind? Right? Do you know your spouse's telephone number? This is a question to everyone listening. Feel free to answer if you're on audio, right? The answer is no, you probably don't, especially if they've gotten a new phone or telephone number in the past 5 years, right? We offload memory to the digital world because it's better at that. So it's no longer about top of mind, it's about share of journey, right? Now, here's another aspect.
Ooh, I like that, share of journey.
Yeah, because this makes total sense when you think about it, right? How do consumers make decisions? In a world of limited media, top of mind was a good game. Why? Because there was limited access to information. And in that, humans operate a specific way. We use our brains to remember things. We carry that information with us. So when we are faced with a scenario, we have that information on hand. But now that we offload that, think about the following scenario. You're standing in a CVS and you're staring at a wall of toothbrushes, right? There's hundreds of these things, all beautiful product packaging designed to grab your attention and make you pick this package up and look. But do we pick those packages up and look? No. Instead, we pull out our phone and type best toothbrush into Google and receive limitless contextual answers, right, that we trust. Now, Google has found that the search term best toothbrush has been increasing at 100% year over year, right? Things that we never thought to be considered purchases are now considered. Why? Because they can be. And there's risk in making any decision. And so how do we mitigate that risk? Well, we go and find trusted answers. This is just the new way. And the most important part is that search for the toothbrush has a journey. It goes across four different websites in the last 70 seconds. Right? So that's the whole new concept. Now I'm just going to piggyback on this while we're on it. The concept of public relations and the idea of we need to own the conversation. The problem is those are often separate from the journey. And the journey supersedes any type of large-scale conversation. Yes, they can introduce people via large scale. Yes, you need to have large-scale PR. But if we're not also a part of that journey, what they find on that journey is going to supersede because it's in the moment. Right? That is the answer of trust in the moment. And that supersedes whatever they have in their brain. Right? And so then that's how it's shared journey. That's why it becomes so important.
Wow. That's really important stuff. I mean, now I will cop to the fact that I love the top of mind thing so much that I did write a book with Spencer X. Smith about using social media to build your return on top of mind awareness, ROTOMA, RETOMA. So it's still, I'm going to fight back a little bit on that because as an individual building your personal brand, you do need to get out there via social and face-to-face and share your journey, invite people to share your journey.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is what you're kind of saying and folding it into, I don't know, my Rotoma gumbo is that I'm going to take your journey description and say, that's why stories are getting so big on Instagram and Facebook and everything else, because you're in the immediacy of the journey as it happens with the individuals that you care about, that you're interested in, that you follow potentially. And through those journeys, you are demonstrating the qualities that define you, that differentiate you, that help you build a personal brand so that people understand exactly who you are, what you do, and how you do it.
Yeah.
This is really cool stuff, Matthew. And I want to give people a chance to connect with you via, well, most importantly, the book that's coming out on March 24th. So it's available now on Amazon. And I just want to read you a couple of the early editorial reviews. This one I like a lot. If you recognize and accept that marketing has transformed, you are halfway there. This book will help you get the rest of the way by helping you decide what to do about it. Practical advice from a real world practitioner. Now that's from Dharmesh Shah, the co-founder and CTO of HubSpot. That's a pretty good get too there, I got to tell you, Matthew.
Thanks, yeah. He was very kind to write that. Yeah, and to your point, like social media is a big aspect of this, right? And I think the thing that people miss about social media is they don't understand what the real value is that an individual gets out of that, right? So first off, there's one thing we haven't done. We haven't defined the word context yet.
Yeah.
Right? So let's do that real quick because it's not a new word. It's been around forever. I mean, you can Google context marketing and it essentially says programmatic advertising. Context is something very simple. It's helping a person achieve their goal at the moment. No one said, I want content, right? They asked a question or wanted an experience, right? There was a reason behind that engagement. And if we can understand that reason behind, we can then meet them in context, right? So you're talking about social media. I totally agree on social media, right? And most people, most brands don't understand it. They saw it as free distribution, but it's not, right? The lowest value of social media is free distribution. The highest value is personal connection. Right, so we must understand how to reach people on a hyper-personal level because that's what it opens up the doors for. Right, it's designed for them, not for us. It's designed for one-to-one interaction, not mass customization, right? So it's not how can we craft the perfect message on social media and get it out there. It's how can we work with our audience in our marketplace to co-create experiences on social media, right? There's a whole new world of things we need to think about.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And Chief Content Officer at Marketing Profs, Anne Handley, said, "This isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts." Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, R-O-T-O-M-A. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way.
Let me tell you, I'm just getting to know Matthew because of a social media connection, and this is how social media works, people, as you build your personal brand. I was able to get, through meeting him in person, Andy Crestodina on this podcast. As part of it, he said, "Hey, what can I do for you?" And I said, "Well, you know, I really love Mark Schaefer. Is there any way you can make an introduction?" He said, "Absolutely. Mark Schaefer's been on the podcast. We have a great opportunity." I used that opportunity to say, "Hey, do you know anybody that I should be talking to on this podcast?" And he goes, "I'll put you in touch with Matthew." And here we go. Boom. 1, 2, 3 degrees separated. Matthew Sweezy's on my podcast talking about a really huge idea and the book that backs it all up. And one of the things I like about the book is it's not just opinion. It's not, you know, kind of conventional wisdom assembled by the new, call it the new marketing crowd. It's actually deeply researched stuff that, and you show the math through the book, which is why Harvard Business Review Press is putting it out, right?
Right. Yeah. And let's be kind of specific on that research. It's a massive amount of research. I mean, over the past, and now it's 5 years, we've done, you know, blind surveys of over 20,000 brands across the globe, you know, over 30,000 consumers, and really been able to dig into what are high performers doing. So these ideas aren't like, "Hey, I think this is what we should be doing." This is what high performing marketing organizations are doing. And then how everyone else can understand it. And by the way, high performers are 10 times more likely to be significantly beating their direct competition.
Yeah, I saw that number in here and I was like, are you kidding me? The difference between the low performer in a category and the high performer of the category was a factor of 10?
Factor of 10.
Wow.
You're 10 times more likely to be significantly beating their direct competition. Now, and so let's talk about some aspects of context, right? We've talked a lot about what context is, why we need to be thinking about it. And there's lots of different elements of context. You know, there's a whole framework in the middle of the book. I think that's too much to dive into if you're listening. I think a couple of core concepts that I would love everyone to pull from the book. There are 3 words. If you can pull 3 words from this book, your life will change dramatically. And those 3 words are with, not, on. Right? That essentially sums up the entire work of this book. Brands need to figure out ways that they can work with their audience, not how creative they can force things on their audience, right? And as anyone with children will tell you, you can't just tell someone to do something. That doesn't change their behavior, right? Telling people is not a great idea. Working with them where they co-create these ideas, that is where we really need to be going. And that is why this new media environment is so important to understand, because it gives the consumers the power and us the power to do these things in different ways. Now, we can look at this in lots of different scale, right? From the grandest scale, this says we need to rethink our very structure of our business, right? Where the old idea of business was we build a product, we then have marketing tell the world about this product, we then sell the product, right? That's Mercedes-Benz's model. Now, Tesla has a totally different business model. They say, first off, we're going to work with our marketplace and we're going to talk about how do we get the world off of fossil fuel. We're then going to say, hey, listen, we got this crazy idea. If you want to go along this journey with us, help us do this and pre-order the car. Then they sell the car. Then they continue to market by an amazing customer experience the entire way through the customer journey, right? If you know anyone with a Tesla, they will just tell you how amazing the experience is, right? And so when we look at the tail of the tape, Mercedes spends $926 in advertising cost per car. Tesla spends six. That is 1/150th of what Mercedes-Benz spends on the comparable model, right? The Model 3 to the C-Class. How many cars do they sell? In 1 year, Mercedes-Benz sold 86,000. When the Model 3 came out domestically, Tesla sold 276,000. That's three times as many cars. Most important part was the cars didn't exist when they sold them. They had never made an economy car before, right? So Tesla's business model is market, sell, build, market. Marketing is a completely different role, scope, and function inside their organization. It's not just how do we take this thing that we know and apply context to it. It's let's rethink the game that we play as a whole and then find out what marketing is supposed to do. So that's a grand scale, right? But most of us aren't on this grand scale, right? Listen, small specific ways that we can do these things. And remember, with, not on, right? There's some easy things you can do. Seemly, they're a very small mom and pop shop that makes clothes, right? They're mostly online. But what they do is they co-create the actual clothes with the consumer, right? They share the designs. They ask for feedback before the product's ever done. So when the product is done, demand is built in and people are already bought into it. Now, a large scale Oreo did this, right? With the My Oreo creation campaign. They said, hey, listen, we know you guys love to come up with crazy flavors on your own. You're telling them to us all the time. Let's make a contest. The three best flavors are the new Oreo flavor. They got hundreds of thousands of submissions by social media. Now, they didn't just ask for these submissions. They engaged with those people on a one-to-one basis. Most of the time, replying to those tweets, posts, wherever they came from, engaging with them, and even going as far as actually creating these cookies, a one-off, just like literally, they will send you a cookie of the crazy flavor that you came up with. They will make it, package it, and it's not in an Oreo package, it's in a box, right? And then they send it to you, right? It's social media gold, right? They explode in terms of what they can do and the reach that they have. They're not forcing, hey, go buy these cookies. By the time the cookies hit the shelf, hundreds of thousands of posts have already been posted about these flavors, right? The world knows who they are, demand's already built in, and they worked with their audience, not on their audience, to not only create the new product, but then to get it out into the marketplace.
Wow.
Right? You can just keep going down the list, but we just need to reframe, think with, not on.
I think that's huge and that's a great example, because back in the day, there would be a sweepstakes that Oreo would do saying, hey, send in a self-addressed stamped envelope to Oreos, to Nabisco, and you could win a blankety blank. Okay, that's customer engagement to a certain level, but what you're talking about is not customer engagement. It's more like, hey, we're doing something cool together because we're working with you and we're actually taking the journey, to use your term, the journey of us working together, and we're essentially broadcasting it via social media so that other people can watch and participate and be inspired by it and, you know, all that stuff. This is some tremendous stuff. I'm really digging this hugely. I want to end this episode, but I want to continue our conversation in just a second as we go into the next week's episode. But I want to let people know how they can engage with you. Now, you've got an award-winning podcast I think people should take a listen to. Can you tell us about that podcast? It's called The Electronic Propaganda Society.
Yeah, it was a pet project I created. So it goes through a lot of the core themes of the book. But it really kind of looks at that one day specifically, about June 24th, 2009, and kind of why marketing is failing and why that day is so important to how we fix the idea of marketing. It's a mini series. There's only 9 episodes. Each one's about 20 minutes long. I think to date, it's won like 5 or 6 different awards in terms of for creativity and podcasting. So if you're into something that you want to go really radical, I'd say check that out.
And then once again, the title of that podcast is Electronic Propaganda Society. And I'm talking to Matthew Sweezy. That's Sweezy. Thank you so much for this fantastic conversation. We're going to be talking about more about this stuff next week, but I want to tease a couple of things I really want to go in depth on. One, you introduced us to the build, market, sell idea and how that's now the market, sell, build idea. I want to go a little bit deeper into that, but I also want to talk about something that a lot of people are both interested in, thrilled by, and very scared of, and that is AI, specifically when it comes to how AI is already helping you, not only personally, but also your audiences or the people you engage with throughout social media, et cetera. So I'm DP Knuten for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and he is
Matthew Sweezy.
We'll be back with you next week for an even deeper, and I'm promising you, even deeper dive into his fantastic new book, The Context Marketing Revolution, that came out on March 24th, 2020, and is now available on Amazon.com and probably in bookstores. Is it going to be in bookstores?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, he's going bricks and mortar and digital. Well, good on you, Matthew. I'll be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.